I like that this format of podcast, it feels like we're almost like an InfoWars, like we're not journalists, we're social commentators. Somebody else did a very well-researched report, and we're just like talking about that plus our thoughts.
Who is Julian Knaa? Where does he come from? Who's funding Everyday Eternal? We have a list of their Patreons. Let me tell you, folks, you'll be shocked to hear who's there. Big
Top patron
showcase
George
challenge. Brian
Soros.
Koval, Bryant Cook, Anurag Das. What do they have in common? Spikes. I don't trust them. Follow the money, folks. Follow the money.
I was watching my opponent on the other side. Had him telling me I got lucky today. I had leaving on my mind. Well, I found shelter at a gathering point in between the rounds. I had 39 minutes left to kill because of the combo I had found. And it's 1, 2, 3, 4, mother kids will take you home and eat. One turns out to slip, I'll see you later. All I got is degeneracy. I've been thinking of all the different ways to beat your hate. Thoughts in his chancellor therapy grid and his pack lets me negate. You think you're safe, but there's just so many ways to turn off all your counterspell. And oops, guess that's the game. When it's 1, 2, 3, 4, mulligans will take you on. Each one turns out to slip, I'll see you later. All I got is degeneracy. And it's 4, 5, 6, 7, off you go, fella. Another bad beat story for you to tell her. All I got is degeneracy.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the legacy podcast that's collectively spent probably like a house worth of money on like game pieces for a children's toy. And we still think paying $45 billion for like the worst website in the world is the most idiotic thing imaginable. My name is Quinn Mori, and I'm here as always with my giggling co-host, Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how's it going?
Very good. I always appreciate the topical headers here.
I'm a newsman. What can I say? As always, also joined with my smirking co-host. You never hear him. We see it, though. He's like slightly amused. Brendan McBain. McBain, what's up?
Hey, guys. Quinn, I've heard variations of exactly that several times in the last day or two. But
just like I've bought so much stupid shit. And then I just imagine like wanting to own Twitter. It's the worst website. We're all on it. But like, it sucks.
I don't see how it's something you can do for the purpose of making money. I think everybody now also is committed to making the website worse as a result of this. So buckle your seatbelts.
Yeah. The thing I saw, I mean, it was in jest, but also was kind of like, oh yeah, that did happen, was, hey, I was on Tumblr. We made that go from like $100 billion valuation to like $45 million in like a year. Like everyone, we can do this together.
It's the perfect reason to stay on the hell site.
Just like imagine, like, how much money does Elon Musk have?
Just too much.
But like, $45 billion is actually like a, like, he still has more money left than you could possibly know what to do with, but it is like a significant percentage, right, of his fortune.
I thought a big chunk of it was like on margin of his existing stocks. So
that's all anybody's is.
Yeah. So it's if Tesla, for example, lost like 80% value, you would get like margin called on the Twitter stuff, and he would like the whole house of cards would come fumbling down. It's not Tesla that he had 44 loses, billion just like sitting around.
If Tesla loses 80% of its value, I think everybody in North America's RRSP is deleted.
Oh yeah, I have like those, like, because I'm an idiot, instead of just like putting my money in like bad things, I have like mostly like green mutual funds or like ethical funds, quote unquote. Like, wonder if I have Tesla stock. I don't fucking know.
It's probably in there.
Portfolio. It's part of the S&P 500, I believe. So yeah. Everyone has it somehow.
It's the largest social program in the United States.
Imagine like, sorry, like going, it's like semi-related, but like, imagine like just being like, man, everyone's making fun of me on this thing. I don't like it. And then thinking that it's not like a bigger loser move to be like, I'll buy it. Like I'm not bothered. I don't know. You didn't own me. I own you literally. Like that's not, is that like a, it's not a get back, right?
It's just, like, this has nothing to do with our podcast, but I just think it's so funny about buying Twitter because like somebody buys like Facebook or something and you're like, okay, there's some curated algorithms to serve, you know, stochastic terrorism posts to boomers and like you can make value from that. But like, what does anybody get ads for on Twitter? Like, it's insane. There's no way anybody's making money or garnering statistics.
Like, that could be a genre of tweets, actually. There's always like people's like weird books and stuff. You know, they like sponsor this tweet. The best like Instagram and Twitter, the best sponsored Instagram and Twitter posts are where you're like, is this just a guy? Like, I don't think it's a business. This is just a guy who wants you to see his tweet. That's fucking deeply weird.
This is the next step for Can Thresh Industries.
That's what, well, the only reason we'll start a Patreon is not to pay for like hosting fees or anything, which so we can like sponsor one of our tweets. Like, why did you guys sponsor this? Wouldn't it be anything like a meme or anything? It'll just be like some random reply to someone sponsored tweet. We're just replying to like Jack, hey, thanks, man. Should we do some housekeeping? Should we clean this up a little bit?
Yeah. I've got a list. Special advance that's gas to Jeremy Edwards for keeping us on the mailing list of upcoming legacy events in the Seattle area. So we have really a whole suite of international events, as it were. First of all, coming up quite quick, there's a Seattle 1K at Laughing Dragon. The note I have says it's southeast of Bellevue. I don't know where this is. But there's a $30 entry. It's May 7th at 11 a.m. And if it sells out, they're going to make it a 2K, which is very cool. Unfortunately, not enough notice for me to head down. There's some other stuff going on, so missing that one myself.
Laughing Dragon's in Issaquah, Washington, I believe.
It is.
Mm. Okay, Issaquah, Washington.
Which is generally south, or it's generally east of Seattle and very approximately southeast of Bellevue.
For is the it before for or props. After Tacoma?
Before, I guess.
If you can correct McBain on that, if he's right, sorry, there's no prize. If you can correct McBain and you're the first person to do it, we'll invite you on to be the first geography-related guest on the Canadian Threshold. Well, you can't talk about magic, though. All you can talk about is places.
The all and geography special.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have well, to talk
we'll
like
talk about magic, just the guest
mountains camp. And islands and tundras and taigas and stuff, but not magic cards.
So that's coming up. There's also a Seattle 1K at Mox Bellevue. This is a $25 entry. I just noticed a $5 discrepancy between these two. So this is the more economical, I guess. But the other one can be a 2K, so go for that. May 29th, which I very well might be able to go to if one of you guys are going.
So I sent this to McBain. I believe Liz is not my wife. We're like, we live together, but like not technically. I guess McBain, sorry, Liz is not, also not your wife technically, but the three wives of the Canadian Threshold, wives, quote unquote. I thought.
Well, Green's least, a wife.
Liz, oh, Green, yes. Yeah, Gravina's a wife, but like, listen, Liz or not. Anyways, I thought they like, at least Liz and Liz were like, we're gonna go away. And like, would like, Liz was like, would you want to this wine weekend with like McBain and Liz? Like, would you want to invite like Jeff and Gravine? And then she put a hold in my calendar for that weekend. So like, are we supposed to go to that?
I didn't have, so we're usually pretty good about a shared calendar and putting things in it when it's important. Mainly my interest is because I put magic events in and then I say like, well, it was in the calendar, so I'm going, but I didn't see anything that weekend. That's why I was like, oh, sweet. We can go to this, okay. But maybe we'll put I'm a pin sure in it and circle back. Fuck Siri, you're listening to
a little loud.
So is this like a Widows of Magic event that would be alongside ours?
It could be.
No. This was like we were going to go with
we were all together. It was going to be six people going.
It was not a magic thing.
Wineries and drinking and just having fun. But we could just, you know, throw them a couple hundreds and say, have fun. We're going to go adventure down in the States, probably get Omicron variant and have a great time playing Magic. Like that could be a thing as well, but to be determined. I'm definitely interested, but I'll have to consult with the heads of the house to see if there's any issues there.
Yeah, it would be such a good time to go down to Mox again. And I mean, see everybody down there, obviously. Like there's literally too many people to list who'd be very cool to see. And just stepping foot in Mox again, going to Azel's Chicken again, it'd be a great time.
Hell yeah.
And then the big one, the headliner that, you know, praying no more variants, no more border restrictions. Puget Sound Battleground 4, July 30th and 31st. There's a legacy headliner, and we've been over this a few times because they've changed it. I think it's on the 30th, correct? Is when they're doing legacy. And then they moved old school, if I understand this correctly, from the Sunday to also the Saturday.
Yes.
Kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
Don't want to choose between the two, but still very cool. Be a great event to be there.
But I think that's, we're going to talk about Puget Sound Battleground 4, I'm sure more in the future. So maybe just, it's a ways out. Maybe we'll just leave the house there.
That's a lot of good. Like, now that there's no old school on Sunday, like the whole battleground will be like me fighting my liver at a bar offsite, I think, on Sunday.
Well, you could show up to the Pauper one or like show up with your play set of tar pans and be like, Margaret, send my tar pans or something to that. Wow, Jeff had to mute. He was laughing so hard. So I think the house is clean. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
So I'm going to pass this over to you, Quinn, for the kind of topic of today. But I just wanted to say that like last week, like this episode's coming out a week later because last week we were, I don't know, maybe in a bit of a doldrums or the in a geography term, the horse latitudes where the opposite of the trade winds where you just don't have two mutes on Jeff in one episode. Very good.
The horse what?
The horse latitudes. So it's similar to the trade winds. Like, so there's a latitude in the earth on the earth where the winds just aren't as strong. And back in the day, you know, when Star City was hosting and doing video coverage for Legacy, trade ships going back and forth between North America and Europe, if you got into the horse latitudes or even in the Pacific, you would potentially get screwed because there wouldn't be enough wind to kind of make it back home. And that's why they call it the horse latitudes, because you would have to eat your horses.
Oh, many people are saying this. This is...
I don't know. You can go prove me wrong later, but I just anyway. So there's a bit of a doldrums.
Is there a pre-modern trade wind rider deck
called the Horse Latitudes?
Like, we have to brew it if it doesn't exist, just so we can name a deck Horse Latitudes.
I did Google Horse Latitudes MTG, and it comes up with playing Choke and Stormtide Leviathan. So I think that works.
Why? Okay. Well, you know, Margaret is the horse masters. So like we could get all the horses, place out of all of them, go down to Puget Sound Battleground 4. She could sign them all. We're good to go. But it was a bit of a doldrums. We didn't have a good topic that we really wanted to talk about and just have a fun time talking about. But subsequent to that, there's been a lot of good discussion in the legacy community and, we wanted to kind of follow up on that. So Quinn, why don't you take it away?
Yeah, a lot of ban list discussion, I think, for like semi-obvious reasons to most people. I have not listened to Why can't I ever remember the names of Eternal Turtles? I've not listened to the Eternal Turtles, but they also have a band episode, I believe, is the latest episode. But Everyday Eternal. So many Eternals.
Should we? I was just thinking this. Should we change our name
to the Eternal Canadian Threshold?
The Eternal Threshold.
Eternal Horses.
Yeah. The Eternal Latitude. Yeah, just,
like the Horse Latitude podcast.
anyways. Probably just to confuse everyone, but we'll wait until the buyout happens from Elon and then he can change her name. But continue, Quinn.
On Everyday Eternal, one they had Lawrence Harmon on. So he has posted a couple legacy related articles that are not up behind the pro paywall on Channel Fireball. So check those out. And set like kind of related. There's like at least tangentially related to the topic of the podcast as well, where they talked about like the big ban list questions. They did get into a bit of like what to ban, but they were more like how do you fix how do you fix legacy? And there was some really good discussion. I definitely recommend checking it out. There was a lot of stuff said. There's a lot smarter than stuff we would say. So we're actually not going to talk about what we would do about the ban list. But I think one of the biggest takeaway, and I think the most important takeaway, was the reason there's so much kind of like discord amongst the legacy community, but like what is the correct solution, is that people have like fundamental differences of what they want the format to look like. And so depending on what that is, you have a different approach to solve it. Right? Like if you have an ideal, you're trying to get us back to whatever that ideal is. And their takeaway, which I am one that I think the three of us all agree with, is like no one's really right or wrong. And you know, you don't need to feel bad about it. But like that's why when someone's just like, oh, ban like 8 cards, and other people are like, no, that's like insane. You know, it's ludicrous that Daze is legal. And other people are like, no, that would be like the worst thing that ever happened. But it's because of like how you see legacy and how you interact with legacy and how you want to continue to interact with legacy. And so rather than rehash like a, hey, what should get banned thing, which I mean, I'm sure we'll do in future, regardless, it's at least at some capacity. I really like that question and gravitated to that question, which is like, why do you play a legacy? And I think we have some stuff that will be obvious to people that we've probably like expressed, but I also like, we don't agree on everything. I don't think we all approach things the same way. So that's kind of the question that we want to like explore this episode. Am I supposed to go first too, or can I ask one of you two?
I think we'll keep it rolling here, but I just want to interject with one little caveat piece that back in the This Week in Legacy discussion at the end of last year, there was a kind of question and comment about this, and we clarified at that point that we are pro Daze. We are a pro Daze podcast. We've mentioned a few times our pro Daze podcast, and we continue to be a pro Daze podcast. So just wanted to get that out of the way before we kind of like discussing your priors, I guess, that bias your judgment. But like, so Quinn, you had kind of brought this up initially. I, for one, like listened to the episode. I thought it was just a really great discussion. It had been a while since I had listened to something that had Lawrence on it. He always has a really good take, and he has a lot of historical context, as well as like a really good strategic take about how all the nuts and bolts work. So it was just really great to hear that. And then to hear also Julian's kind of very historical take, like he's been playing the format for, I don't know, 2006 or 7 or something like that. But it's back when I played Vintage. Oh, man, so long ago. But just to have that context, it was really good. And then to have Callum's comments in there as well, and like mostly excellent British puns and British like sense of humor in there as well, about Daze on Suspend and stuff, was always really great. So yeah,
I thought you were gonna throw it back, but I'll throw it to myself.
Throw it to
answer the question, take us over, like why I play Legacy. I mean, one, like, I'm old. So I turned 40 in December. I started playing Magic, like, when Revised was out. I think I remember going to the store and Legends packs were like $3 more. And I was like, that's like unattainable. Still kicking myself for that one, not getting an extra $3 from like saving allowances to get some Legends packs. But I like playing with old cards. But at the same time, because I started Magic when I was so young, especially, I like new cards too. You know, I know I've complained about a lot of the new cards, but like the concept of new cards, and I think especially about thinking about something in a way that wasn't intended. And so that's why one of the reasons that I don't love like the cards that are just like clearly powerful. But when something gets printed and then someone goes, Witherbloom Apprentice, for example, when someone goes, oh, that actually like makes this really janky combo with Chain of Smog. Like I have 4 Witherbloom Apprentice, I have 4 Chain of Smogs, I have 4 Griffin Canyons. Any like dumb thing? Because those are my like favorite things when you're a kid. Someone's like, oh, did you know like this could happen? And you're like, oh, wow. Like you just blown my mind. Like you're saying I put these two cards together and this will happen. And they're like, yeah, but then like, here's all the ways it can go wrong. And then like, I didn't hear any of the last like 5 sentences you just said. All I heard was that I have Ally from Cairo in play. And then I put a Mystic Veil on him. I just can't lose the game. And then, you know, my neighbor's going, well, there's Wrath of God. And like, and I'm like, no. I just can't lose the game.
Did you read these two cards? I can't.
Yeah, it's unbeatable.
Just to add to that, Quinn, that idea of like emergent effects where things interact that were never intended to interact, but you've got this underlying rules base that allows cards to just do things, I think is one of the coolest underpinnings of Magic. And it's something that's been in place. It was one of the things that made Magic so amazing when it first came out all those years ago and is still great today. And like, I could go without like weird Velky suspend stuff or cascade things, like where it's like really non-intuitive. But I also just love that kind of emergent effect where like a new set comes out and it's like, I'm not one of those people who like starts scanning Scryfall and like checking all the million interactions against every single card and then still potentially missing things. But the fact that that happens, I think is really cool.
And like if I were to think of my favorite cards in Magic, probably like since 2015, there hasn't been a change except Lion's Eye Diamond will have snuck into the top 5. I just like Lion's Eye Diamond. Like you just look at that. I remember a friend showing me, he's like, I have these Magic cards. Can you guys maybe look at them? Tell me if they're worth anything. And I'm like, sure. And then we're like, this one, buddy, like just if you need money, we can sell it for you. If you don't need money, just like here, like, I'll bring a sleeve over, like just put it away in a box somewhere. And then, you know, when you decide to sell it, let me know. I remember looking at me being like, that's like the worst card I've ever opened in my life. I was so mad when I opened a booster pack and that was a rare. Like, yeah, it's like some other cards got printed. And that is like my ideal Magic card, where it just looks like complete garbage until something else happens and then it's not. But yeah, that's like, I think a big part of being like drawn to the format. Also, like, as part of being, you know, like, historically, I'm, like, quite competitive. Like, I did, like, a lot of sports. Well, not a lot of sports. I did, like, a few sports, like, quite seriously, though. I didn't do a lot of sports because I did, like, judo in particular very seriously. And so, like, I do like competing. And so, Commander's fun. And that was, like, kind of my, what drew me back into Magic when people were like, oh, we just play this game, Commander, or whatever. It's kind of like playing around the kitchen table. But, like, I don't also enjoy Commander when like people are trying to win, because then it's like, oh, someone has to sit out. Like, it just sucks. But you sit down and you play Legacy, and it's like, for someone who like I want there to be a winner, but like I don't have any energy to be like uber competitive. Like, Legacy's perfect. Like, if I sit down with you, Jeff, and I play Legacy, no one's mad that someone lost. We both know that's what we came to do, right? Someone came to win. You a both game.
Came to lose.
we both accepted that we're gonna lose, but one of us gets to win because we're playing each other, and the loser's not like, oh wow, like, can't believe you just finished the game in two turns, right? It's just like, if it happens, it happens. If it goes 10 turns, it goes 10 turns. So like that is an aspect too.
What if it's a World Gorger loop and no one's a winner?
Oh, then we're both winners. If Quinn's loop in World Gorger.
Then we get to play an extra game of Magic because we've ID'd game one. Oh, not ID'd, sorry, drawn game one.
Dude, there's also nothing sicker than forcing a draw with World Gorger Dragon when you would otherwise lose. Like, that's so sick.
Just the eject button on the jet aircraft.
There was a card when they started making the cards specifically for Arena that only worked like online because they had weird clauses. There was a combo deck that someone found, and it was like a 3-card combo that like you perpetually drained your opponent by bouncing this thing in. It died instantaneously, and then it would come back.
Vesper Lark, you like permanently give -1/-1 to, so it just comes into play, dies, brings itself back. Reanimating
itself. And so you had a 3-card combo where you like had to like, you know, give it the -1, and then also you had to like, you know, have something in play to like for the drain effect, like Blood Artist or whatever. But when you were desperate, you could just intentionally draw the game, and then the Arena would come up and be like, if you don't take a game action, the game will draw. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's fine, we'll just sit here until sometimes your opponent would just scoop, you get free wins. It's great. I digress. Back to Legacy. That actually ties in. I'm a little bit of a contrarian. I'm sure people, if you've listened to this podcast, have heard that. And I love the idea of just like winning with something that's not the best deck. And there's times where I've like, you know, I've played Miracle, dabbled in Miracles. I've even sleeved up Delver once in a while. There were times where like decks I played have been the best deck, but generally speaking, I'm just like, I want to do a thing, and like, I'm going to do my thing. And I like that idea in Legacy. Apparently I'm a rare Magic player who understands the stack. I know that's not many players do, from what I've been told from official WotC sources, but I just like fucking love putting spells on the stack. And I think that doesn't happen in really any, maybe Commander, but doesn't really happen anywhere as much as it does in Legacy, like a 1v1 format. I like spells better than creatures. Well, that's shifting in Legacy too, obviously. But like, no offense, Jeff, but like, I don't know, like creatures are a means to an end. Like I stack it up with a bunch of instants and then I kill you. And
I mean, if you listen to Julian on the Everyday Eternal, Legacy was supposed to be the creature format.
I remember hearing that and being like, oh wow, that's not how I play Legacy. I want all the power. Like I want Dark Ritual and, you know,
no, you want
Brainstorm Rocked and Ponder.
Monk and Mystic Enforcer, like just clunky old cards like Grim Lavamancer, so good, kills creatures, kills players, can't go wrong. The idea of like nostalgia that you brought up, Quinn, is pretty big for me as well. Like the idea of like, oh, like emergent complex things, like, you know, that could happen in any format, that just is a thing of Magic. But the fact that you're playing with cards that you played with when you were a kid, like it could be even the exact same card. Like Jeff's Rashad and Port has tapped millions of lands at this point.
I literally have an Underground Sea that I have had since I was like 12 years old.
That's sick.
Yeah. So there's,
it probably has like Ellie from Cairo written on the back because you needed a proxy.
Yeah. Like, oh, sorry. Yeah. I need a proxy Guardian Beast. So I just wrote on the back of this land.
Yeah. So like that fact, like, one thing's true for me in Legacy, like Misdirection. Like I played a lot during Urza's block and Mask block. So like Daze to me is like deeply nostalgic, and I absolutely love Daze. Like back in Standard, I played with Daze and all the other crappy blue cards. I didn't have ports because I couldn't afford $20 Rashadan ports, but I had Daze because it was a common, and I absolutely love that stuff. So I really appreciate that.
And Daze, we won't need to get into, like, you know, Daze might be a maybe. Let's just pretend it's also in this category. But the last thing I've ever done was Brainstorm, which I just like fucking love casting Brainstorm, even though I still can't do it very well. But it's not just that there's those cards you remember, it's that they're not going anywhere. They're like too powerful to get crept out of the format. And I love that. Like my some of my friends I've had to like, we'd have to take them out to pasture, but some of my friends will never like lose their luster. You know, they're too strong.
And I love that's that. What you think. Have you seen Modern Horizons 3? Oh man.
Yeah, it's a real holy shit.
Legacy will just be called it. Modern Horizons in the future, but
Brainstorm is kind of the first Modern Horizons card. You know, they fixed Ancestral Recall, quote unquote. What could possibly go wrong? Look, we got another kick of the can. We fixed it. Yeah, we just forgot about five things.
They fixed Lich as well. Like Necropotence is like totally fine.
Necropotence might be fine. It's probably not. Bargain's fine.
It's fine. It's bargain. Bargain's I don't fine. Know. Back in the day, and like extended and standard and stuff, bargain was generally not fine. I don't know.
But lots of things were fine back in the day, like Grizzle Branding. So anyways, we get on topic. Okay. McBain, you were engaged in the most. Or why do you play Legacy? Why are you here?
For me, one of the big ones that initially comes to mind is that nostalgic component of like both having played with cards a long time ago, but also just like getting to use the same cards over and over and over, and just like getting to have those play patterns and experiences and that familiarity. There's a certain just enjoyment there. One thing that I really like about Legacy that separates itself from other formats is really the how powerful it is. Like when I look at, you know, Quinn and I before the call, you and I were talking about like Pioneer and stuff like that. Now it's just like, oh, you know, like, oh, apparently this is like a new competitive format. There's going to be more support for it. Let me have a look at some of the decks. Now it's just like, man, this isn't powerful enough. Like there's like, when I think of like Wasteland is an extremely powerful card. It's almost always just a strip mine in many instances, but you have to like respect it and build your deck against it. And like, it's a thing, it can happen. A lot of people play it, things like Daze, even Force Will, all that stuff. Lightning Bolt is something that's really powerful, but it's more common and used in other formats, where I think there's a couple things in Legacy that
Swords to Plowshares.
Swords is another one. Yeah. It's not really
sitting. No creature is 100% safe. Or yeah, so Progenitus. I lied. Sorry. You know what I mean, though.
But yeah, there's just really, really powerful cards. And particularly like on the spells side of things, I think there's a lot of permanence. Like when I look at some of the modern lists where they've got like in one deck, there was like Lurises and Renin Six. And what was the other? Ragavan. And there was just like all of these like cards that had been banned from Legacy, but they were like in the exact same deck in Modern. I was like, what the absolute fuck? Like, how is this totally not broken? But obviously like those underlying extremely powerful cards that exist in Legacy don't exist in Modern. And that really sets a different power level apart. And that's something that I really enjoy. Kind of on that stack component, I co-sign that, like in terms of like a lot of interaction where you can both be really interactive when there's not a lot of resources in play because there are free effects or ways to cheat on that. But then also when there is more resources available, you can still be really interactive. Like it doesn't really matter. Whereas in some other formats, you have to wait to like that key like ninth turn where you're like, I'm going to triple spell and then I'm going to quad spell on top of that and then beat you. And then that's really like the watershed moment of the game and then it's over. Whereas all that can be kind of compressed into earlier turns in Legacy. And then the last one for me is the diversity. And I'm speaking in terms of like a, maybe not one particular point in time on the format, but, and this was kind of talked to by the Everyday Eternal podcast where they were talking about the quote unquote play what you want. And there was a bit of a conversation of is play what you want dead or not, yada, yada. We don't want you to go into that, but like that idea of a tier 2 or 3 deck can still be somewhat enjoyable. And I'm going to end it there because that obviously goes down into a bit of that band conversation. But I've always really liked the fact that you don't just have like five decks to play and that you can play other things. And just a final kind of thought on that, because there is that diversity, especially at like at least our local metagame, when things aren't like hyper competitive and people don't want to just bring out the biggest gun, people will have fun and experiment with those slightly lower tiers where the games can be, again, going back to those emergent order and design and interaction, things that may have never happened before all of a sudden are happening, and it's fun and exciting. So those are the things that kind of like, when I think of Legacy, it really draws me to that as opposed to just some other Magic format.
I think like when you're thinking about like talking about diversity, if we're accepting that we live in Delver of Secrets' world, or just like the Delver deck world, because maybe Delver of Secrets specifically now is a little, you know, questionable too. But that, like that style of deck, right, will always be the top dog. Or if it falls below, it'll find a way to like claw its way back up. I think when Legacy is at its best is when you have the most diverse set of pilots who say, you know, actually, my Delver matchup is like pretty decent. And they're not wrong. Like, it's fine for Delver to be number one deck when everyone goes like, you just, when everyone's like, oh, but I have a chance. Because I think I'm like 50-50 against Delver, you know, and I have a good match here and a bad match here. And like, that's when, to me, when I look back over like the time, my time playing Legacy, when like Legacy has seemed like the most fun.
I would
never know what you're going to expect.
I wouldn't necessarily pin it solely on Delver. Like, I know some of our glory days for Legacy were when Miracles was,
era.
Was very much the best deck.
Absolutely.
But again, one of the things that Julian was almost pounding the table on was, I want longer games. And even though Miracles, like maybe not towards the very end when they got Mentor and it was just like they could cover all the bases at once, but before that, like the games were really drawn out and interactive, and you could like, Jeff could be sitting there on D&T with like some master four-dimensional chess plan that he's like planning out and that's executing right on and winning. And that's like super awesome and exciting. And I'm totally fine with that kind of thing. And it's, but it went back to that, like we're veering into the band discussion, but it went back to that
coming right to the edge.
It went back to that difference of like, if there's like three or four tiers of Magic decks, the difference between them is a little bit less so,
right,
or less obvious.
Maybe to put my like original comment into a context that even less people understand is when you were on the source and you were like in the thread for your deck and you were like, ooh, I think we get bumped up to deck speed, I think it's gonna happen.
Yeah, well, that was always the thing.
When you could feel that way about so many decks, you know, you could be in the shittiest deck and people like, we're going to get bumped up to established decks. It was like teams in soccer, like being like, we didn't get relegated. Like, we're going to jump up a tier. Like, we're going to decks. I remember when, in fact, when they decks to beat, and there was just like the one page of everyone being like, we fucking did it.
I was also going to add when like you would look at decks to beat and you're like, well, maybe it's the same comment. When you look at decks to beat and you're like, how is that a deck to beat? Like, what the hell?
And then you go look and at the results and you're like, oh my
God. And then you actually like drill into the results. Cause again, it was just like, it was almost like this automated thing. And you look at the results, you're like, huh, well, look at that. Like, I don't think that deck's that good, but sure enough, there it is. Whereas if you kind of applied the same algorithm now, I think the decks to beat list would be a lot smaller.
Mm-hmm. I think there'd be three or four of them that would never leave. But before we get down that road, or maybe to avoid that road together, Jeff,
you guys just hit so many good points, man. And like, obviously, I have to agree with pretty much everything that you said. I guess let's start with some of the things Quinn had pointed out. So you reference yourself being a bit of a contrarian, and I feel that way about myself also. Like, I personally really love to root for the underdog in just about any situation that comes up. And what better way is there to like kind of self-fulfill than just being the underdog by playing shitty creatures in every format? So it like you could point out that, you know, I'm giving up however much EV by not playing Delver or Miracles or learning how to do these things. And it's still like, yeah, but I want to take this and do as good as I can with it instead of just picking up, you know, the best thing that exists. And, you know, you have the same spirit with Infect. It's never going to be the best thing it is, but it can be good enough if you're good at it to take it all the way. And like that exists in other formats for sure, but it feels like it's always been the most amplified in Legacy, which is just the coolest thing. And I mean, like you guys are saying, and Everyday Eternal is saying too, a lot as time has moved forward, the kind of old adage of like, it's a format where you can play anything you want if you're good at it and you can hang is kind of fading. But like that, at least at some point, was like a core piece of the identity, which is just too cool and was such a draw to come in and play.
Yeah, I think like other formats have archetypes or like style specialists, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, like not Patrick Shaman, sorry.
Craig Wesco.
Craig Wesco is a different example, but that's a good one. Craig Wesco, you're like, what's he gonna play? Like aggro white weenie.
Yeah.
You know? But in Legacy, you know, you're like someone where you're like, oh, like they're the mud expert. And you're like, what? Like what?
Right. Oh, that's Tesserator, Phil. Yeah.
Or even not Tony Murata, you know, you're like, what? Mm-hmm. Oh, he's just like, he's really good at like Green Cloud Post. And like people who don't know the farmer, like, don't you just play the shit out? And you're like, you think that, but.
No, exactly. And to that also, I mean, it's like the general breadth of the meta, like at large. And again, right now it's smaller than it has been a lot of ways for viable strategies. But usually like when you're looking at it too, within the list, there's so many different decks, and not just decks. There's so many different like core strategies to things. You know, it's like you can have two decks that represent a possible like turn one, turn two combo in something like Tess and like Ant, and then also like Doomsday, and like the way in which they play out and the way in which you navigate a game versus each one is different. And it's interesting that, you know, they can both be doing the same thing, trying to win the game on, you know, as fast as they can, but the method it's achieved is so different. And then, you know, you take that to tempo decks like Delver, you know, all different kinds of control matchups, I mean, D&T and like the kind of control mindset of like D&T. It's really interesting because, look, this is the farm we play more than anything, all three of us. So we're not that qualified to talk about everything else, but it does feel like from spectating other formats and stuff, you don't really have that. You kind of have a certain amount of decks that exist, and those fit into a smaller amount of strategies. And Legacy is just wide open because of, I mean, no surprise, the amount of cards that exist. Also, just the kind of like stack interaction and like intricacies of just the general gameplay you get because you have this gigantic card pool, and like the amount of things you could possibly be playing around if it's like the most efficient, or like, you know, somebody's playing the third tier down like possible hate card for you, you maybe need to be aware of, or you see and you then have to like navigate around, is like super cool. The amount of powerful hate cards and answer to things that exist in the format compared to other places, like, you know, Blood Moon, Back to Basics, Wasteland, Choke, like all of this stuff that like impacts the game in a massive way. And it doesn't always exist, but it does enough where you have to respect it. You know, they talked on Everyday Eternal too about the cycle of control decks being like straight blue white to try to combat, like, you know, we need to have a stable mana base to fight all of these things. And then in order to try to fight against those, people start moving into like red blasts and stuff. So you fuck up the mana base a bit. And then that's where the meta hangs. So you fuck up the mana base even more to get more powerful cards and play four colors. And then it cycles back around because you have to respect the Blood Moons, the Back to Basics and everything like that. And like, that's kind of a cool cycle that doesn't really happen that much in other places because you just don't have those like slam down pieces that are so powerful in the prison pieces, which is such a big draw to the format. One thing that I did do going into this too, because this is like with magic, but Quinn, you'll relate to this because you have glasses. You know when you go to get your eyes tested and you're sitting there and the person's flipping like they're like number three or number four? Number three or number four? And you're like, I have no fucking idea. You're like, they look the exact same to me and I can't tell. Sometimes when I leave, I feel like I'm going through my life having tricked myself wearing number fours when I should have a number three. And my brain just can't differentiate my bias to an arbitrary number. And I've just like formed the wrong opinion for no reason. Is that just a me thing? Do you ever feel that way?
Like with my eyesight in particular?
Yeah.
My eyes aren't that bad. So I know what you're talking about, but like,
yeah. You know, the uncertainty you have in yourself and your own like confidence that what you're thinking is what's actually true.
I mean, so, that happens all the time.
Relating that to this magic thing and everything I just talked about that I like in this format, I went through my Magic Online history because I record every Magic Online game that I play, and I've done it since like 2017. And I just wanted to see a picture of when I played the most Magic Online to see if the, you know, the format that existed then lines up with what I say that I like. I was actually surprised.
So just before you go into this, I had no idea what the fuck you're talking about when you're talking about your glasses thing. And I was a little bit lost, but what you're saying right now, where you objectively go and like check the tape, you're like, what does the data say? As a way to like kind of fact check yourself, this I really relate to, and I like this. So let's continue.
Well, go to an optometrist. Maybe you'll relate to both. So I just very quickly just totaled it up by matches played in a month, and then I just looked at that for a year, and then I just tried to find another like what stood out the most there. And the time in which I played the most Magic Online, and it's by like a fairly significant amount, was September 2020.
September
2020 to December 2020, which is like prime Oko bullshit time.
Oh my God.
I don't know how this is possible.
Okay, that's also 5 months into not doing anything time.
Yes. I figured for sure this would be so fucked up, but like it's just crazy.
Okay, you know when like March hit?
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone's like, oh, like what this coronavirus thing. And then I felt like, you know, there was like 2 months where you're like, I just don't do stuff. And then you reached out in Zoom and did a bunch of shit. And then at least here in the summer, it was like, hey, you can actually go outside and it's like pretty safe.
Yeah, but so I chose that time to play against Oko.
No, but everyone spent that summer being like, you know, like we have a little bit of freedom, like, you know, we're gonna make it through this, like. And the September hits in Vancouver, you know, like it's like very few people are going to get this reference. So it's P&E weekend and the rain comes. And so I'm not surprised at all that September 2020, like no vaccines. It's pissing rain every single day in Vancouver. You're back being like, God, my life is miserable. And like the world sucks. Mm-hmm. And you know what still like sucked, but sucked less than that? Having someone elk every single one of your creatures.
Just, I felt for sure. If it was going to be something in 2020, it would be, you know, just by virtue of all of a sudden home all the time, you know, like April, May, something like that. Weather's still shitty, but no, nothing.
I think though, like that time, like especially when you had a partner, like April was kind of scary, you know, like you still don't really know if you're going to like die if you got like COVID, you know.
So you're trying to use your brain to explain the results, Quinn. You just have to accept the result.
No, but yeah, like, no, you guys are introducing a wild variable into like the history of like, oh, like when we're talking about, hey, 2016 was better, and just like, I didn't play as much in 2016. I'm like, yeah, because you just lived life.
So I think I can actually offer a factual piece here. So obviously Oko exists this whole year and is awful. And I think me not playing more Magic before this point highlights that. Do you want to guess of things that happened in September 2020? What else happened in terms of Magic September 2020? I see some blank faces. There's a set that released. Pretty innocuous set. kind of fucked up Belcher. Zendikar Rising.
Zendikar Rising?
Skyclave Apparition.
The only thing I get
to fight back is Oko. So I'm sitting here fucking mad all year, just pissed off about this stupid card and thinking I have to put so many resources into this. I hate this. All of a sudden, Skyclave gets printed. I play 320 matches in 3 months.
Skyclave was pretty fucking sick.
I mean, it doesn't fly, but it's pretty good.
All spirits should fly, right?
Just like...
like they're fucking ghosts.
By the rules of physics.
Imagine if you, like... I don't know if you guys believe in the afterlife, but like... just imagine for a second that we all believe that when you die, you become a ghost. Man, if we all became ghosts and like Jeffy couldn't fly, I'd just be like, yeah, McBane, Jeff can't fucking fly. He's a fucking ghost. Look at him. He's walking through a wall. He can't even levitate.
He was cleaved from the sky.
His feet aren't even touching the ground, but he can't fly. He just kind of hovers. He's like a millimeter off the ground. It's pathetic.
Yeah, good point. This fucker's a skyclave. This isn't a groundclave apparition.
Well, skyclave's a place, though, right? That's an even bigger. Imagine,
no, like... he was claved from the sky. He's falling.
He's claved? That's
no, skyclave's a place, right? Isn't it?
I don't know.
I think you're right, Quinn.
I'm just...
Dying, being a ghost, you can't fly, and then you're stuck in the air. Like, that's the biggest... like, can you jump off the skyclave? You're a ghost. Like, you can't die twice, right?
You're just going to be like somebody who's, you know, in space, on a spacewalk, and they just cut the rope, just floating, looking at the skyclave forever.
Being a ghost, I mean, already probably seems like a bummer, because there's some eternal damnation shit going on. And you can't even fly. That's brutal.
Okay, throw off it. I was going to say you're beating a dead horse now, which apparently has to do with the horse latitudes. So I just wanted to add to your point, though, Jeff. Having sleeved up a bad 60 card D&T deck for last week, and having Skyclave in there. There was so many times where there were these weird interactions that come up and I was like, what am I going to do? How am I going to beat this? And then I just like cast Recruiter and go get Skyclave and be like, all right, problem's fucking solved. Like it was so good.
I love Skyclave too, because you kind of put the problem on layaway. Like sometimes you exile a 4-drop and you're like, thank God that Jace is gone. But you're like, I can just never attack with a ground unit again because they will have a 4/4 and eat the thing I attack with.
Oh, that's like, as a non-D&T player, that's the, when someone like attacks, you're like, oh, well, time for me to strike out that Skyclave apparition. Eat the Thalia, we did it.
So just to kind of bring it back to wherever the fuck we were, we kind of talked about like nostalgia, diversity, complexity, the powerful nature of the format. I know you're necessarily not in that powerful realm, Jeff, when you're talking about the decks that you like to play, but like, are there other things that like, when you think of like a C versus other formats, like what really draws you to this format?
I mean, you guys know me. I'm a Rube Goldberg kind of guy. Like I need to get the levers cranked and the knobs twisted to, you know, to just get everything going and setting up those, like, you know, the sum of all this is like, it's, I don't know, the deck's greater than the sum of its parts. Like those situations are just so fun to me, and like getting the engine going and having people look over and, okay, wait, so what happens when, how does this work? And like really having a place to also leverage like a superior, like, stack or like kind of rules understanding on a lot of things. You know, if you're playing Delver, the only trigger you need to know is like, I cast a spell, I have to care about fucking DRC, and on my upkeep I gotta check the top card. That's all you have to know about triggers. And like being able to, you know, first strike, put, you know, counters on my Jite, shrink this thing, pump that thing, vial something else in to do that, like just taking this encyclopedia of useless magic knowledge and using as much of it at once is perfection to me. And Legacy is the absolute best place to do that.
I think on power level too, like, I mean, I have over the course of, you know, almost 3 years made many jokes about how like D&T, you know, you can't fix your hand. It's not powerful enough, but like white, like disruptive white, we need will exist in all formats. And like, there's one in standard right now. There's one like historic right now. There's a Pioneer deck. There's a modern deck, and the modern deck gets Aether Vial. And then you get to Legacy and you have Umezawa's Jitte, and you have Rashad Import, and you have Wasteland. And suddenly the stuff you're doing with Aether Vial in modern, or could do it in modern, is like, oh, well, actually it's good now, because like, I don't need my lands, and I'm doing shit with my lands to make your lands not work or not exist. And like, that's super powerful. Like, Wasteland is one of the most powerful cards in the format, right?
Yeah, it, honestly, the stuff in, it's really a shame, and I think it does a disservice to D&T and Legacy to be lumped in with like D&T in modern and similar decks in like Pioneer or Standard being named under that moniker, because like, it's not a prison deck because you play Athalia and a bunch of shitty creatures, you know, and like the playstyle is totally different.
Yeah. I mean, it's a prison deck because your opponent's like putting in Thalia, flashing it in, and also being like, you don't have lands anymore.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that really just everybody's dream? Like, doesn't just everybody want to win a game by your opponent being unable to play? I mean, that's why McBain plays lands.
I mean, we both want that. I think we all three of us want that. Except my way of doing that is that you don't play a turn.
Right, I killed you.
Your guys is like, you don't play spells. And I'm like, okay, yeah.
My ideal game of Magic, my opponent has many turns. They just can't cast anything on any of them.
This is great because we've come to the ultimate conclusion where we actually all want the same thing. We play Magic and you don't. Which is actually funny because it's really contrary to something that I've left out and was going to mention. Which is, I actually like the way I approach Legacy. Like, when I go on a Thursday, it's just, I want everyone to have a good time. And I get that for some people that's not going to happen. Like, some people are just like, hey, my primary way of like having enjoyment is that I win, you know, and that doesn't make you a sore loser necessarily. It's just like, why are you doing it? I like to win. And someone's got to lose and someone's got to win. So it's not, you know, you can't please everyone. But on the whole, it's just like a thing where like, I show up and I'm like, it's like McBain, like, why I gave you grief for saying like, oh, I'm going to build Oops and like lend it out. And I'm like, no one wants that. If you love Oops and you want to bring it, that's great. Someone's having fun. If you're lending Oops out, no one's having fun. You know, it's kind of like why I don't bring Reanimator unless I'm like, well, there's like a threshold of like where there's a big enough payout, or I'm hungover enough where I can't function, where I'm like, I'm just going to have to sleep a Grizzlebrand. But like on Thursdays, you know, and again, if you really love Reanimator, more power to you. You're having fun. That's great. I like to show up with decks where it's just like, there's going to be some game actions, you know? I think it's like kind of like it's what I came for. And like, my opponent just wants to be able to try and do their thing at least. I think that goes to Julian's point too, right? Around like the speed of the game. I think Legacy, there's always that threat. You can die in turn one, but on the whole, you're like, I'm going to like do some stuff. I might not be successful, but I'm going to like try to do some stuff, and it's going to like, it's not going to be like super early on where I found out that I'm never doing stuff or I'm dead.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about Rube Goldberg machines, Jeff.
Yeah.
And one of those things that like why you like Legacy so much. And I know the three of us and many other people collectively saw a list that top aided one of the recent challenges on the weekend that had that general kind of flavor to it. Like the emoji of like the two eyes looking to the left or right, excitedly, I think was definitely used a few times. And I believe your immediate response was, I have all of the money cards in this list already. And I immediately knew that I was going to have to play against this deck in the near future. And this deck is, would you just call it like Esper breakfast or like Cephalid 80 card Cephalid, I mean, breakfast? What?
Yeah, this is just Cephalid breakfast, like Yorion Cephalid breakfast. I mean, shout out Makuto 86 for coming in eighth in the Legacy Challenge, but this just is truly, you know, Yorion Cephalid breakfast. And because you're playing Yorion, you get to play some non-combo cards in here. So you just get to chuck in, you know, Recruiter Guards, like Baleful Strix, Solitude, Palace Jailer, and try to play a little bit of a fair game, while also just flipping your entire deck over with Shuko and Cephalid Illusionist.
I do love how those like one ofs in the Yorion lists that like normally in a 60 card list, you're like, ah, shit, I drew the Shuko or I drew the Dread Return. Like, I don't want this card. Like, you're that much less likely to hit it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hit like your average cards that you actually kind of want. And I don't know. I saw this and I was like, mother of God.
That being said, one of like, also the highlights of this is an 80 card list that's running one Cabal Therapy and one Days.
The one Days is very suspect. The Cabal Therapy is there, so after you flip your whole deck, you can
make the coast clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
One Days. It's truly living the dream at some point in time.
The one Days is incredible. Also, yeah, I oh God. You know, there was two lists that were posted over the weekend. I can't remember the name of I always get them mixed up because it's not Matt Vuk, because they both have pictures of Knight of Reliquary as their profile picture on Twitter, so I mix them up all the time. But this other person played a paper event, and I think they top aided with the same kind of thing, and the number of Tundras and Underground Seas they have in their deck, I have. This one that came eighth, four Tundras. What the fuck? Four Tundras, three Seas, two Scrubs?
I can lay some Tundras. I
can't keep up. All right. But yeah, so I'm currently on the hunt for a whole bunch of cards that are worth a total of probably $25. And then I have this. It's very dangerous owning more dual lands. Because all of a sudden, you know, look, for the longest time, I had Wastelands, Kraga's, Port. And the decks I can play, I branched out to buying the stuff to play Eldrazi because I had Caverns and, you know, buying some Ancient Tombs were kind of cheap and some Eldrazi Temples. But now that I have, like, a few blue duels, the world is open and it's dangerous.
Oh, I can play anything. And that's why I'm garbage at all of them. It's fucking great. One thing I noticed in this, and I don't know if it's like, maybe Jeff, you can explain like if there's like a good reason for it,
mm-hmm.
or if it's just like the sweetest flex. There's no Cauldre Complete in this list, but there is a Batterskull.
Yeah, I saw that in there, and I'm curious as to what the angle is. I suspect it might just be to try to like stabilize and stay alive to win through another means.
Through like a combo.
Yeah, just by giving you the kind of the Miser's lifelink. But that was one of the first things I noticed. Like,
would you maybe cut the Days and put in Cauldre Complete?
That seems reasonable. The Days seems like a fair cut.
I respect it from like a, you know, like strategy perspective, but I respect
Singleton Days
Makuto 86 more just as like a someone living life, you know?
Like, can you imagine we're playing on Thursday? You don't really know what I'm playing, right? You know, we do this, we play a game, something happens, I get you with Days. And then, like, we're just talking about it after. And I play around Days
for, like, the whole time, and then you show me, yeah.
I'm playing one. Like, that's the biggest, like, Chad move there is.
It's so good.
There's one Caracas. There's a couple one-ofs in here where you're like, whoof, you hit that.
I think, like, Caracas, though, like, it's like, basically free. You know, in your 80 card deck, like, I think if you're like, I need Caracas as like a hedge against something, playing one's not good. If you're just like, I might as well run one Caracas and I get wastelanded, whatever. I think it's like Odawara. You know, if you're playing like a deck with no blue sources, you're just like, play one Odawara. Might come up, it might not.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you don't get dinged for life when you tap it, I think kind of makes it like, yeah, I don't like run this. But like, just how many times did they draw the Days on like turn 7 or something and be like, oh yeah, the Days they put in there, fuck. I respect the hell of it. That's all I'm saying.
I also, there was someone in paper top-aided an event with Esper Vial, and it only had two Gilded Drakes in the main deck, or two Gilded Drakes in the entire deck. And I felt this was like right in your sweet spot of it's only 100% more Gilded Drakes than you currently own, but I did also see you conversing with a certain James Onions about
this is true
purchasing another Gilded Drake.
I have a line on a second Drake and it's a fair price for both of us. I'm not happy about it because Gilderdrake is so expensive, but I believe that is going to be a confirmed purchase on my side.
Ooh. Also, you can run a one of Glasspool Mimic like our friend here, and then it's basically the third Drake at that point, right?
It's true. Yeah, this is sweet. I don't think I'm going to get everything together by Thursday. Colin was already shaming me when I was asking if anybody had a Thassa's Oracle.
You want to buy one though, right? I can lend you one.
I do want to buy one, yeah. But yeah. I mean, maybe,
like, I can't sell you one, but I can lend you one. You can have your choice of like English, Japanese, full art, whatever you want.
This is the Lurus Cube. You have the whole range.
But yeah, no, I think it's a super sweet spot to be in. Like, to one, you know, have you like your D&T, your solid deck, but then Espervile has so many flavors. Like, you can be that another one of those crazy Espervile pilots, and everyone will go, "Oh, have you heard of Jeff Kinsey? He's on this crazy technology."
I was trying to think of like what's like the smallest like breakfast package you could put in here. Like, what's like the Starbucks like egg and protein box combo piece you could put in here? Is like you need like one Thassa's Oracle, one Cephalid Illusionist, and then just like a single like Shuko, and then yes, like Hedra Return. I guess you need Dark Amoebas though, right? You could not, and it's a little dangerous.
Well, at that point, you're just showing off. You're like, "Hey, look what I can do! Like, I'm gonna sacrifice my Stoneforge and my freaking Mother of Ruins." Like,
but yeah, just think about how compact that can be. And you could just move it in, move it out. I think it's what, 4 or 5 cards?
Yeah, at that point, you're like, well, what's the point?
You could play
combo.
So you could probably cut all of the Nomads and just run the one Shuko more reliably if you played 4 Urza Saga. Because then you just fetch the Shuko, right?
Like, yeah, but dude, can you imagine getting attacked by a construct equipped with Shuko?
See, now we found the perfect use for Urza Saga.
It does equip you for just, 0. You could find it on 3 and then equip it to the construct you made on 2 and get in there.
You're going to win some games that way. That point of damage is going to come in handy.
This is bad.
What do you think will happen more often? That you'll get the Shuko, just equip it to a construct, and then you'll be like, "Well, that one damage got me there," or that the daze wins you the game.
Just like, if only this, like, this is only benefiting by being an artifact, basically. And like,
okay.
One more thing, and then you can take me away. I just wanted to say, have either of you actually had to fight in combat with like shitty creatures against the Nomads Encore?
No, like, but I imagine that is proximate to banding.
Yeah,
in terms it can be of, very like, annoying. What's going on?
It's one of those abilities where you only ever see it in the context of comboing, and then once like it comes up in some amount that's like marginally relative, you're like, "Wait, what the fuck is happening? This damage went where?" Dude, that's more reason to run Kaldra because it's indestructible. You can just shove all the damage from like Nomads Encore.
Nomads Encore, that's so sweet. That's actually awesome, right? You're swinging in, your opponent's like, I guess attack, you can block with Nomads Encore, you do it, and then just like, that's... We've finally unlocked the power of Galdra Complete. This is exactly what we're talking about, where you have a card that's unplayable, and you find another card that's unplayable, put them together, bam.
I think this is probably the best single example of that ever in history.
I think it's better than LED Infernal Tutor, and that was my former number one. So
yeah, no, that's fair. Jeff, you've been talking a lot about gas and how awesome some of these cards are. Do you want to close us out with the last segment?
I would love to. So I mean, as usual, this is a hard thing to come up with also, and trying to think about what's happening in a time where we're not having like paper events. There's not that many big things happening we can really talk about. But I came to a conclusion I think is actually a good one. I went to a pre-release on Sunday. Quinn was there, just at Magic Stronghold. And it was a great time playing pre-release Magic, like sitting down, you know, you get your little booster pack and you sort out your cards by color. And like, we did this a few times over the pandemic and webcam times, just everybody goes and gets packs, comes home, and then just, you know, makes their deck. But being in a room, like, everybody's doing it, and, you know, somebody's like, you have 20 minutes to complete your deck. And you're like, with your buddies agonizing over, like, do I play this stupid fixing artifact, or do I play this awful enchantment? Like, which one do I do? Do I play 18 lands instead? It's just a great experience. And I immediately went like 0-2 in the pre-release through some pretty bad beat stories that I'm not going to mention here because it'll be much of a convergence. But there's three rounds and there's no prizes for only getting one win. So I was like an inch away from dropping before that last round started, because I was like, look, I played my games, I had fun, I'm done, I can go home. But then I looked over at the 0-2 bracket, you know, and the people I'd be playing against. And it was almost like unlocking like a memory of like why certain people play Magic. Everybody in that bracket was either like a young child who was like, you know, into this game and just fucking excited to get like new cards, or people that were even like closer to our age, but like were just still learning Magic. And like in that stage where everything is sick, like I played this game against this guy in the third round, and like every card that I played, he'd pick it up and read it and be like, wow, like that's so cool. And I played, there's like Ledger Shredder is like a 2-mana 1/3. And it's like when somebody casts their second spell on a turn, you connive. So like you can loot and you can put a counter on it. And when I cast it, he was like, that bird is so cool. He's like, I was really hoping I'd get one. Like, oh man, that thing's so cool. And like he killed it and like I lost the game. But like we finished afterwards, and just that realization that like this thing that means nothing to me, I think of this, I think this is a cool bird gentleman who shreds up legal paperwork, but this guy saw this and he's like, I can't wait to see that card and put it in a deck. And I asked him, I said, did you get one of these cards? Like this ledger, did you get one? And he's like, no. And I was like, do you want this? And he's like, dude, for real? Like, that's so cool. Like, thank you, man. And like, just that stuff. This, I looked it up. This is like a 90-cent card, right? It's never going to be anything in any format. It's never going to matter. It might be a random little EDH thing that comes up here and there. But like, just the purity of that meaning so much to this guy, and he was so excited about it, is almost like one of those little jolt reminders of like, you don't just have to go through your life going, Delver, 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 DRC, DRC. And like, just enjoying, like Quinn was talking with a lot of this too, just the base level of like a game that kicks ass and things that are cool was absolutely gas. So go to pre-releases and hang out with the people. Maybe they're doing well, but hang out with the people that are new to Magic and excited about everything, man. It rules.
So I'm curious if you want to go next, if that's okay.
Oh, okay. I was all inspired. Like mine is very much in that vein as well.
Oh, mine's also related. Well, you can go. Okay. Mine's related too. We can go if you want then.
No, go for it.
Okay. Also thinking about the pre-release. So Jeff, you inspired me. And probably the opposite side of the pre-release spectrum, I want to shout out like the store grinders, like the people that you were like, I know all of these people. I recognize them. You sit down. Even if you don't know someone's name, you're like, you nod. You're like, we've seen each other before. We've dueled as mages, and those are people like you just did not see during COVID, you know? And I don't like regret that. That's just like how my life is. I don't like, I have good friends I've made during Magic. I have other people I just see around the store, you know? I have not discovered whether these people are people I might be friends with. Some of them might be, some of them not. That's just how life works, right? But it's just great to like see the pairings board and be like, oh yeah, I know that person, and sit down and be like, what are you doing in the 1-1 bracket? I'm supposed to be playing somebody who doesn't lose. And then, you know, you start playing, and like, it's always people too, like the store grinder people too are always like very tight, you know, like only the perfect amount of communication before, like, until you're done playing, and they're like, oh man, I brought in this cyber card and I did this thing, and like I saw when you did that, and oh my god, it was so good, you know. And I just like love those interactions, and like didn't know how much I missed them, you know, when we had the time where we just like weren't playing in store.
I wanted to actually, you reminded me of something else that happened too, talking about shouting out the store grinders, and specifically for like our community outside the Legacy community, just like the Magic Stronghold and kind of like Vancouver scene. Like there's a lot of really good people you know, in your interactions with them sometimes, just like you said, playing in a pre-release or whatever, and you may go, oh, it's a modern guy, but I know him. And there's good people all over the place. And I was sitting there playing my match with this guy, and next to me, there's two kids. They're probably, you know, 10, 11 or something. And they were, I don't know, it's like 24 and 25, like the seats, and their opponents didn't show up, both of them, because it's the last round. There's no prizes. And they were kind of like bummed, and they're sitting there talking about their decks and looking at stuff and like, oh, I just want to play Magic. But like, oh, I didn't win anything. That sucks. And one of the guys comes over that was, I don't know, he like 3-0'd on the earlier events, so he had some packs or whatever. And he sees these kids sitting there, and he was just like, hey, like, you guys want a pack? And they were like, yeah. And he just like threw them each a pack of like New Capenna. And like these kids picked this up and were like, oh, thank you, thank you. Just like ran out of the store. Like they fucking lived for that. And that's so cool.
Hell yeah.
There's good people around, man.
Yeah. So my That's Gas is a shout out to Danny and Terry, two local boys. They played a bit on webcam, but they're both dads. They both got professional jobs. They don't have a ton of time. There's a number of Legacy players in a community like this, but they were able to come out to Legacy last Thursday and had a great time. It was really just awesome to catch up with them. Again, speaking to that play what you want, do what you want kind of thing, Terry showed up with Thassa's Oracle Paradigm Shift. And like, I'm always recording the metagame, and so I'm always looking around and seeing like what people are playing, and I glance over and I look, and Terry's sitting there and he has four Paradigm Shifts in his hand. And I was like, what the fuck? I was like, what is this even? And, but yeah, so he was playing Paradigm Shift. Danny was on Alurin, like just a normal old, your father's Alurin, 60 cards. And it was great to see them have fun, but also it was like, they hadn't been like keeping up with everything. Like you show them some new card that came out in the last year and a half, and they're like, whoa, what is this? Like almost that same like Christmas enthusiasm of like, oh wow, like this is really powerful, like cool, without like a lot of baggage of like, oh my God, like I've seen this like four times in the last five matches, blah, blah, blah. And disgruntled. Like they were just excited, and it was great to see them out. And those people who step away and then get to come back, and like the group's still there and all that stuff, I think it's awesome. It happens. It continues to happen.
I was confident in my decision to skip Legacy for the second week in a row. And now I know him as Danny and Terry. I'm like, God, fucked up.
You would have been paired against Danny almost certainly.
Ah, so, what a joy.
Yeah. But again, Skyclave, Alurin costs four. Get out of here. Skyclave costs three.
Oh yeah, cool, you flashed it in. I'm like, wait, don't you have to? No, you flashed it in. You just give it a response. Yeah. I see.
So there's like times where I was like recruiting and just like loading up on Skyclaves. I'm like, I will close this door. anyway, so yeah, that was gas. Overall, guys, I think this has been a pretty positive episode.
Wait, even if you Skyclave, don't they just like combo off in response?
You Skyclave in response.
So right, like but don't they just like they're like
they on put the stack, harpy on the stack, you put in
before the gate effect happens, you can,
but then they have the second harpy and then you lose.
But that's fine. Like, I should probably learn the
second Skyclave.
I should probably learn when to interact with Alurin instead of just like result of learning. I'm probably fucking dead. Just show me.
I mean, it's one of those things that you can choose to learn how to interact with it, or you can just be like, whatever. Like if you choose to learn how to interact with it, you're probably only winning like 5% more games.
If you resolve a 4-mana green enchantment against me, you fucking got it. You did it. Anyways, anything else before we take off? I'm trying to think of other 4-mana green enchantments people could resolve.
Me too. I'm racking Arborea. My brain.
No, all I was think gonna, of I was gonna the, say the, 4-mana green cards, so you can go with Eureka.
That's more questing beast. Yeah. Thrun.
I'm not gonna like scoop to questing beast.
Scoop to Thrun.
Correct McBain on the geography question they can't remember anymore. So it's easier for you to just lie and say that you did it. Or tell us what 4-mana green enchantment that I should scoop to. That's your mission. for the next two thresholds. And after those two thresholds have expired, we'll see you again, friends. Thanks for listening.